Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, Alicia Malone with Scott Movie Mance and the Schmoes Know. This is Profile. In-depth spotlights on the greatest filmmakers and artists in motion picture history.
Hello, Profilers. Welcome to episode 48. That's 48 episodes of Profiles. That gets a high five right there. That's 48 great filmmakers. That is 48 different hairstyles.
Yeah, I know, right?
From Alicia Malone.
Gosh, yeah, if you look at my showreel, I change my hair so much that it's hilarious.
I walked in the studio today. I said, hi, I'm Scott Nance. Nice to meet you.
I do look very different, but hopefully, you know, it's fun anyway. I like to play around.
Well, you know, I like to keep my hair gray, which is fitting for our profile today, which is none other than the man himself, George Clooney.
Yes.
And, you know, like, it's 48 episodes in. I'm thinking, yeah, you know, let's do George Clooney. And then when we're doing all the research on it, we're like, well, this guy is like the ultimate profile. Actor, producer, writer, director, success at all of it, humanitarian, activist. I mean, he has got a full plate of cards.
He sure does. I didn't know this until I did the research, that he is the only person to be nominated for Oscars in six different categories.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That is amazing. And he is someone who, he really gets the business. And we've both interviewed him a couple of times. And when you do, he is so charming, but he keeps you at a distance. You know, he keeps the media at a distance, but he knows how to work it.
He does know
and
how to work
he's
it.
He's like a classic movie star. He reminds me of Cary Grant. He's just so charming and suave, but he doesn't let his looks dictate what he does. He's always pushing himself, always trying different things. And I love all the different directors he works with.
You know, I was going to ask, you know, we always talk about our first blood, the first movie or the first time we saw these people. What was the first time you actually interviewed him? Do you remember?
I remember. It was when I just moved here to America, to LA, and I interviewed him two times in a row. The first was for Descendants on the red carpet. And he was just so nice and charming and funny and really smart. And then I interviewed him just a few days later at the Critics' Choice Awards. And because he's someone that you feel like you know, because he's so familiar, he said to me, wow, because I just dyed my hair again, surprise, and it was even redder than before. So he's like, wow, your hair gets redder every time I see you. And I said, yeah, your hair gets grayer. And he pretended to be angry. He was like, oh, we have time for one more question. This is outrageous.
yeah.
And then he laughed, and I was like, oh, he's just the best. What about you?
First time I interviewed him was like 12 years ago or 11 years ago for Good Night and Good Luck.
Wow.
And it was a great movie, and obviously one that was very, very special to him for a lot of reasons. Yep. And talk about like all the different hats he wore for that film. But most recently when I interviewed him was for it was at the Toronto Film Festival, because he produced Our Brand is Crisis.
Yes.
And I didn't know he was going to be there, even though I knew he produced the movie. So when he was walking down the carpet, just like talking to all the other outlets, he was talking to the outlet next to me, and he stopped in the middle of their interview and saw me because he recognized me. He said, hey, how are you? Good to see you. So then I was like, oh, that's cool. He remembered me. So like when I was interviewing him, I said, I want to thank you for not dyeing your hair.
Being the silver fox. And I love all the humanitarian work he does. You know, he's been trying to find a resolution to the conflict in Darfur. He's raised a lot of money for the earthquake in Haiti, and so much more. And as an actor, he's played both the suave guy and the idiot. And today's profiles, we're going to mainly focus on the films that he's starred in, but we will be talking a little bit about the films that he's directed and produced as well.
And, you know, this is, like you said, he's worn all these hats. He's a great humanitarian. And, you know, I think that when you look back at his career, he's someone who could
Don't call now.
We're busy. We're taping the profiles here. You know, he's someone who could have, you know, was very successful on TV doing ER, and where like certain actors like left their TV shows at the first sign that they might have a film career, like that guy from NYPD Blue, David Caruso.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he left, and I mean, he paid the price. But Clooney, even while he was doing films, he stayed with ER, and the turning point was when he did Out of Sight.
Yes.
Because then he started making good movies. Yes. I mean, I liked, was it One Fine Day? I thought that was a sweet romantic comedy.
I really loved One Fine Day.
Yeah, it was good.
I loved it.
You know, and From Dusk Till Dawn, that was a good action
really
movie.
Really cool.
But this is a, you know, you talk about Cary Grant. He's like Cary Grant times 1,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of just like he's been so successful at everything he's done. And he still finds a time to do good work for good causes.
Yeah, for sure. He has had a wonderful life.
Yes,
he has.
Which
is a perfect segue into playing our video. Let's roll it.
George Timothy Clooney was born on May 6, 1961 in Lexington, Kentucky. His mother, Nina, was a beauty queen and city councilwoman, and his father, Nick Clooney, was an anchorman and game show host. Growing up, Clooney was very active in sports and in 1977 tried out to play professional baseball for the Cincinnati Reds. After attending both Northern Kentucky University and the University of Cincinnati, but not graduating from either, Clooney scraped by selling women's shoes, insurance door-to-door, stocking shelves, working construction, and cutting tobacco. When his cousin Miguel Ferrer got him a small part in his feature debut, 1982's And They're Off, Clooney pursued acting full-time, appearing on TV shows like The Facts of Life, Roseanne, Baby Talk, and a short-lived series called ER. But starting in 1994, it was the other ER in which he starred as Dr. Doug Ross that catapulted him to fame. Bigger roles in One Fine Day, From Dusk Till Dawn, and Batman and Robin followed shortly thereafter. But it wasn't until 1998's Out of Sight that Clooney's run of critically acclaimed films started, and he's been on a roll ever since. As an actor, a director, a producer, or writer, George Clooney has been nominated for 8 Academy Awards, winning 2, Supporting Actor for Syriana, and Best Picture for Argo. He also won an Emmy and 4 Golden Globes.
Really impressive.
So impressive.
Yeah.
You know, okay, I just want to get this out of the way. Batman and Robin. What do you think of that movie?
Terrible.
It's bad. But I'm going to say this.
Bat nipples.
I'm going to say this about Batman and Robin. Yes, it's my least favorite Batman movie, you know, including, obviously, you know, the Nolan films. But I feel like if you look at that first round of Batman films, you know, with Keaton and Val Kilmer.
Yep.
Even though Batman and Robin, which came out in 97, was bad, he was still, I think, the best Bruce Wayne.
Really?
I mean, I know I'm going to get some hate.
Yeah.
Well, just because it was like a good role for him, it just happened to be in a bad film.
Right, yeah.
And he took a lot of blame. Like, he said, oh, it's my fault that Batman and Robin bombed. It wasn't. It wasn't his fault.
But I also like the way he jokes about it. I remember hearing about how his suit, he couldn't do anything, and he had to kind of be sort of wheeled up, and he did this impression where he was like, I'm Batman, and then wheeled back down again. It's like he embraces everything, his good films and his bad films.
But that film, like, that was the last...
of its time.
Of its time, and once he did that and moved on to a movie like Out of Sight, which was the next movie he did, he never looked back.
Yeah, exactly.
But what was your first blood?
My first blood, I mean, I don't remember seeing him in ER or Roseanne or Return of the Killer Tomatoes. Tomatoes, yeah, I didn't see that. But I remember seeing him in From Dusk Till Dawn. But then the one that I really remember, and it is one of my favorite films of his, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, is One Fine Day.
I love that movie.
I saw it when I was younger, like on VHS, not in cinemas, and I just became obsessed with it. I just thought it was really sweet, and the chemistry between him and Michelle Pfeiffer, I thought was really nice. And he plays his dad, and he's, you know, single dad, and he's got a bit of a roguish charm about him, and I just thought they were so good together.
I felt like that was a movie that really should have, like, catapulted him into superstardom for film.
Yeah.
And it really didn't happen.
Yeah.
But it is still, I mean, it's movie's 10 years old, if it's, if you can believe, 20 years old.
Yeah, 1996.
Yeah, crazy.
Whoa,
time flies.
And now I feel old.
My first was Doug Ross on ER.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was 94, and I watched that show religiously for like the first 5 or 6 years. Ironically, when he left, I kind of stopped watching it because I liked him the most. I really liked him a lot on that show. He was charming.
Yeah.
And but he was also had commitment issues. And, you know, being in the 90s and having commitment issues. issues related to it. Yeah. You know, but the first film that I saw him in was from Dusk Till Dawn. That came out, because that came out in January of 96. And then One Fine Day came out shortly afterwards.
That's right.
But it was like, you know, badass kind of movie. It's kind of two movies in one, mm-hmm. right? Because the first half is like very sort of Tarantino-esque.
Yep. And then it becomes this vampire genre film.
Crazy ass movie from Robert Rodriguez. But
I was like, anything at that time, anything with Quentin in it or involved in it, I was like, done, sign me up. Well, let's get into our Fast Five, shall we?
Coming in at number five is...
It's like seeing someone for the first time. Like, you could be passing on the street and you look at each other, and for a few seconds, there's this kind of a recognition. Like you both know something. The next moment, the person's gone.
Love it. Out of Sight.
Love it.
Great movie. Released June 26, 1998. Two Oscar nominations, adapted screenplay and editing. Cost $48 million to make. Box office was about $78 million worldwide. Not great, but this was, like I said before, a turning point in Clooney's career when he started doing critically acclaimed movies. Uh-huh. And he had said at the time, it's not about an opening weekend. It's about a career, building a set of films you are proud of, period. And that was definitely the case with Out of Sight. And his first collaboration with Steven Soderbergh.
Exactly. They kind of established them as this great duo together. They had such great creative energy together. And like you were saying, like before this, Clooney had movies like Dusk Till Dawn. He had Batman and Robin. But this is the one that really cemented him as a movie star. And I just love the cat and mouse game between his character and Jennifer Lopez's character. I think she's never been better than in this movie. And I think it was the pairing of her with George Clooney that really elevated that. I mean, it's stylish film. It's very sexy.
It's sexy.
Very much like Soderbergh. You know, it has that crime caper feel. It's got that great music, the editing and the color grading.
The non-linear structure. Yeah. I'm just going to take it one step further about Jennifer Lopez, that she's never been better. I'm going to say that this is the only good movie that she ever made.
Whoa, I'm sorry. Made in Manhattan.
Exactly my point. I'm sorry.
But you're right. Selena's pretty good.
Okay, so I'll give you Selena.
I think she's the best in Selena. And then here, she was really good.
I'll give you Selena. I'll even give you Made in Manhattan. But this is definitely the best thing she ever did. It's almost 18 years ago. But it is a sexy movie. Like you said, stylish. It's gritty, entertaining. It's slick.
Yeah, and I love this structure.
It's so good at all these things that you just mentioned, the structure, the crime caper and everything, that you overlook the fact that, Leash, this is a romantic comedy.
Yeah, it is.
And it's a great one.
It's a really good one because, like many romantic comedies, it's the people from opposite ends or the wrong side of the tracks or the different people that can't possibly be together. How are they going to overcome this? And then slowly kind of you see. And it's very, the chemistry between them. I mean, very sexy. That scene in the trunk is pretty amazing.
And that scene at the bar towards the end of the film.
I love the dialogue between them. Yeah. I mean, it has that almost, the pitter-patter almost of a screwball comedy, the way they go back and forth and they're a great match.
Yeah.
And I think Clooney is often that way with his romantic leads, that he's a great match, like intellectually as well as being like
physically. Definitely.
A match for them. And this character as well is kind of what he's played before, but the first time he really did it, the kind of lovable screw up. He's a thief, but just one last job, you know, and you can't help but root for him along the way.
I love the scene at the bank in the beginning when he's robbing the bank. He's so charming. And he says, he takes the money, says, thanks, have a nice day. And the bank teller goes, you too.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. But Clooney actually said of Out of Sight, it was the first time where I had to say, it was the first time I read a screenplay where I just went, this is it. Even though it didn't do very well at the box office, it was really good fun. And Roger Ebert said, George Clooney has never been better. Here at last, he looks like a big screen star. The good-looking leading man from TV is over with.
He also said, Roger Ebert said, between him and Lopez, these two have the kind of unforced fun in their scenes together that reminds you of Bogart and Bacall.
Bogart and Bacall.
And we also got a comment from Billy Pollihan, who is actually watching the show. I just saw him tweet on his TV at home.
Oh, cool.
On the big screen.
Way to go, Billy.
So we're quite large on his screen right now. And he said, Out of Sight is a film that I watched for the first time and needs attention for me out of sight. It's Steven Soderbergh at his finest and George Clooney in his late ER phase, showing us that he was more than just a pretty face. His chemistry with Jennifer Lopez is excellent, and the additional performances from Don Cheadle and Albert Brooks, yeah, we should mention them, make it that much sweeter. It's a funny and heartfelt crime caper that proved George Clooney is a movie star that Hollywood not only wants, but needs. Hashtag film geek.
Hashtag profile for life. Thank you, Billy. Very, very cool. You know, I mean, I talk about the scene from Out of Sight where he's robbing the bank. You know, you talk about the trunk scene, the bar scene. What scene would you pick for your right stuff with this movie, with this guy?
Yeah, I couldn't go past the trunk scene. Because watching Out of Sight again, I just realized, just how perfectly scripted that scene is and edited as well. And then just the little touches, and you see their relationship change over the trunk, and it is very sexy as well. So I like the dialogue in that scene and, the chemistry and the back and forth between them. But it was hard to choose between that and something from Oh Brother Out There, like the song.
Oh, yeah, of course. I know you love Oh Brother.
That's my personal favorite George Clooney film. What did you choose?
I went with Up in the Air. The scene towards the end of the film, when George Clooney goes to surprise Vera Farmiga at her home.
It's heartbreaking, that scene.
I swear to God, I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I mean, neither. Not,
did you see that coming?
No.
I mean, did you have any idea that she had this life?
No, and I think that's the point too, right? He had no idea, and then you see that realization. You think they're perfect for each other.
That I just remember I saw that movie at the Toronto Film Festival in 2009. And when he goes to her door and she opens the door and you see the kids run up the stairs and the way he just backs away.
Yeah.
And he's just like so hurt, and he, you know, finally makes a connection with someone, and it's too late.
I know.
It's just too late.
And how people can be different on the road when they're traveling. They can pretend to be different people.
Yeah.
Sort of compartmentalize their life in that way. Yeah. That's a good scene.
That was a great scene. That was, and you know, it takes a very talented actor to pull that off.
Yeah.
And he did.
Definitely.
Amazing.
Well, let's keep going. Our Fast Five number four is...
Number four.
You're a liar.
I only lied about being a thief. I don't do that anymore.
Steal.
Lie.
Ocean's 11.
Once again, great back and forth.
Yes, and once again, director Steven Soderbergh, released on December 7th, 2001, cost $85 million to make. This movie was a big hit worldwide, making over $450 million. Of course, this is a remake of the 1960 Rat Pack film of the same name with Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Jerry Lewis. I love this film. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's slick. It's fun. It's just a good time.
It's a good heist film. You know, I love heist films like this that set up the team, like putting together the team, and then it's the planning, and then it's the actual heist, and then it's the aftermath, and it has enough twists and turns to keep you engaged the whole way through. But it is just, it's Hollywood entertainment at its best.
It definitely is. And what movie, in terms of like getting everyone together, did this remind you of?
I don't know.
Seven Samurai.
Yes. Well, that one probably did it first, right?
Yeah, it definitely did it first.
Because then every other heist film were like that. We need this guy. We need that guy. And then
it's
we'll
so
put
great
it all
watching
together.
Them put everybody together.
I love it.
And like Brad Pitt, he's always eating in this movie.
Yeah, and I love Casey Affleck and Scott Kahn together.
They're hilarious.
They're back and forth. I mean, it's just, it's really well written. It's so much fun to watch. I just enjoy rewatching it so much. And Sean Burns from the Philadelphia Weekly at the time summed up it perfectly for me. I read this and I was like, yeah, this is exactly how I feel about the film. He said, it's a giant ice cream cake of a movie that tickles the pleasure centers of your brain, restoring the good name of large-scale, old-fashioned Hollywood entertainment. Because it does feel a bit old-fashioned.
It
and
does.
The original movie with the Rat Pack is not very good.
No, it's
basically
not.
Basically just an excuse for them all to hang out together.
But I mean, that's funny. Talk about hanging out together. Clooney said about Ocean's 11, it was the easiest shoot for any actor, and we all knew it when we were doing it. We were all like, it's never going to be better than this.
It looked like they had a lot of fun. I remember reading about all the pranks that they would play on each other, and it just seemed like such a good time, and it's got such a great cast all coming together. And yeah, once again, I love George Clooney as Danny Ocean. I think this is a movie where he really uses that suave charm that he has naturally in his favor, because that's exactly what Danny Ocean should be. This guy that you don't want to like. but you can't help it. And the guy that can talk his way out of anything
and does
and be very smooth operator.
Well, Steven Soderbergh, who worked with Clooney a lot as a director, as a producer, they did their Section 8 films that they produced together, yeah. of which Insomnia was one of them.
Oh, yeah, that's
right.
Yeah,
he produced Insomnia. A lot of people don't know that.
Didn't know that.
Soderbergh said about Clooney, he inspires people, he listens, he's generous, he's loyal, and he's funny, which is crucial. Not surprised.
Yeah.
He solves problems better than anyone I know. And back in 2001, a not as gray-haired Scott Mantz said about Ocean's 11, you ready for this?
Yes.
This will not surprise you coming from me.
Okay.
There is a cool breeze coming off this ocean. Come on, right? King of the cliches.
Buns.
Ever since he left his ER scrubs in the dust a few years ago, George Clooney has gone through great lengths to play some very charismatic and very greedy big screen characters. He went from stealing Uncut Diamonds in 1998's Out of Sight to stealing Kuwaiti Gold in Three Kings. In last year, this is back in 2001, The Perfect Storm, he knew catching big fish meant big bucks. And earlier this year, he won a Golden Globe for his performance as a bumbling fugitive in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yay.
Now he goes for whole car cash in Ocean's 11, and he is irresistible, ultra cool, and that makes him the perfect choice as Danny Ocean.
Very true. And a lot of people watching live on YouTube are saying, rest in peace, Bernie Mac.
Oh, Bernie Mac.
Yeah. But Rachel Cushing on Facebook said, though I know he has more than proven himself as a versatile actor, I like my George Clooney to be dapper and suave with just a little twinkle in his eye and that one-sided smile that makes me go weak in the knees. He's like a modern-day Cary Grant, and in no movie is that more evident than in Ocean's 11. Like the original 1960 film it is a remake of, Steven Soderbergh's heist adventure defines the word cool from the actors to the costumes, the setting, the elaborate theft devised by George Clooney's smooth ex-con, Danny Ocean. Clooney is simply perfect as this intelligent yet honest rogue who puts together a special kind of band of brothers that manages to pull off one of the most fun and funny revenge heists in movie history.
Agreed, Rachel Cushing. Always well written, Rachel Cushing.
Yes.
Ben Kramer has this to add. Hiya, Ben. Ocean's 11 has always been my favorite George Clooney movie. When people say he's a 21st century Cary Grant, this is the movie that showcases the qualities we saw in Grant. Everybody says that.
Yes.
The good looks, the charm, the witty banter are all utilized perfectly thanks to the wonderful ensemble cast and masterful direction by Steven Soderbergh. Hashtag film geek. Hashtag profile for life.
Well, recently I got to interview George Clooney for Hail Caesar. Mm-hmm. And so I mentioned, you know, the Cary Grant comparison. And also I mentioned a comment that he made on his Inside the Actor's Studio episode where he said that the comparisons with him and Cary Grant were just because he was a hair actor. I love that. I love that phrase. It's so funny. Actor. But let's get into more trivia of George Clooney. Hit me with something that I might not know.
Well, did you know that he auditioned not once, not twice, five times.
Yes.
You do know this. You do. Wait, go ahead, finish
for
it.
For JD.
Yep.
In Thelma and Louise.
Yes.
The role that eventually went to Brad Pitt.
His buddy, his pal, his co-star from Ocean's 11.
And he also auditioned for the role of Mr. Blonde in Reservoir Dogs, which went to Michael Madsen.
Wow. That is very cool. Well,
imagine
did you know
him doing the dance and cutting off the ear?
I could see him.
Yeah.
I could see him doing that. That would have been awesome, actually.
It would have been cool.
That would have been very cool. Did you know that his maternal great-great-great-great-grandmother, Marianne Sparrow, was the half-sister of Nancy Lincoln, the mother of President Abraham Lincoln?
No,
I did not
know that.
This guy should run for president.
That's so crazy.
But I would vote for George Clooney right now for president.
I love the fact that his mother was a former beauty pageant queen and his father was at one point on AMC hosting. So he has the kind of the classic movie knowledge and then the good looks as well. But did you also know, I know you know this, but anyway, that he apparently got into a fist fight with David O. Russell set of Three Kings, apparently because David was mean to the extras. And after that, David O. Russell said he wouldn't make another George Clooney movie if they paid me $20 million. And I'm always wondering, you know, these two are often on the awards circuit at the same time.
Do they run into each other?
What happens?
What do they say?
Do they just avoid each other?
I don't know.
Are they civil to each other? Is it water under the bridge now? Who knows?
I got to tell you, though, Three Kings is
still really good, isn't it?
It is a great movie.
Despite the drama.
I got to tell you, you know, doing our Fast Five, I don't want to give anything away, but it is a movie that was ahead of its time because it came out in 1999, October 1st. And when we went to war, like the Gulf War started in March of 2003, I went back and I watched Three Kings again, and a lot of the dialogue in that film could have been written after 2003, not in 1998 or 1999. It was so ahead of its time.
I rewatched it recently when I was sick, and it still holds up.
It's a great movie. Yeah. The cinematography in that film.
The editing. The music.
Yep, it's great.
Everything. All right, well, let's keep going with our Fast Five. At number three is...
I'm not the guy that you kill. I'm the guy that you buy. Are you so blind you don't even see what I am? I'm the easiest part of your whole goddamn problem, and you're going to kill me?
Love that. Michael Clayton.
Michael Clayton. This movie came out October 5th, 2007. 7 Oscar nominations, including Picture, Director, and Best Actor for George Clooney. 1 win for Supporting Actress, Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
Cost $25 million to make. Box office worldwide, $93 million. Written and directed by Tony Gilroy. Now, you said you saw this recently after not having seen it since 2007.
Yep.
How was it for you?
Loved it.
That's great.
I forgot how great this film is. Yeah. I mean, I remember liking it at the time. But watching it again, it's like it feels like a 70s political paranoid
totally
thriller.
Yep.
So that same structure to it. The acting is brilliant. I think George is so great in it. He's definitely playing against the suave type because he's an operator, but a very different operator to Danny Ocean. He's a fixer, but he's completely different to that suave con man.
He's a fixer whose personal life is in shambles.
And then he has a moral
crisis of conscience.
With him.
And it is superbly acted. It's a gripping
and I like
corporate legal thriller.
The structure as well, because the first time I watched it, I remember being so confused.
It is confusing.
And then, because it jumps back 4 days earlier, but watching it again, it's so much more satisfying, I think, that way.
It's engrossing. It's fully immersive and it's smart. It's intricately plotted to the point where you really do need to go back and watch it again. And when you do, you realize just how watertight this movie is.
Yes.
There's not a wasted moment in this film. And I agree. When I was watching it again, I was like, oh, this feels like a movie they would have done back really well in the 70s.
For sure.
And actually, it was interesting that Denzel Washington turned down the lead role as Michael Clayton because he didn't want to work with someone who wasn't a tested director. I mean, and even Clooney at the time passed on the film and he came back to it, thankfully. The Boston Globe loved the movie. Clooney, for his part, allows his movie star good looks to go flabby and soft, all things being relative, of course. And he buries the performance way down into the gut. It is great. Entertainment Weekly gave it an A, saying it's better than good. It just about restores your faith in film.
Yeah, well, you're saying he passed on the film. I mean, it is seen as a risk for him because also the director and the material as well. I mean, it's a very subtle performance from him, but it's very convincing. He's somewhat of an unlikable character, but you follow him along. It's a redemption story, and I always love that kind of character arc.
Yep.
And, you know, he was nominated, like you said. And who did he lose to?
Wait, 2007? Oh.
Someone that you wouldn't be that upset to lose to because it was brilliant.
Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis for There Will Be Blood.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
Understandable.
Okay, I'll take that.
But really good. And I think that happened a lot with George Clooney and, of course, Leo, like we talked about before, that he's always been up against someone who's quite flashy and big.
So basically, Daniel Day-Lewis said to George Clooney, I drink your milkshake.
I drink your milkshake. Yes, definitely. Dan Skip-Allen gave us our comment about this one and said, George Clooney, you're so funny. George Clooney as Michael Clayton is probably the best performance of his career. The irony is that he plays a smart corporate fixer, but his messed up personal life is what really needs fixing. This is a serious role, no funny business here, and it really shows in the dramatic scenes with Tom Wilkinson's character. What a powerful performance, and it's one where Clooney really means business.
Clooney does mean business. He means such business that he's made so many other films that would have fit quite nicely into our Fast Five.
Gosh, so many.
So in the others, hit me up with one of those others.
Okay, well, we talked about From Dusk Till Dawn. We've talked about Three Kings.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll say they talked about. So let's talk about my favorite, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
You love that movie.
From 2000, with his first time with the Coens, his first idiot with the Coens, and he went on to play 3 other idiots, including in Hail Caesar, which I just love when he talks about that and he's like, gets the script and he's like, really, guys? Mm-hmm. Another bumbling idiot?
Come on.
But this one, he's definitely playing against his type. His character is so stupid, over the top, but he's still lovable. He's a con man too, a criminal, Dapper Dan. I love this movie. It's just funny, great music, and a great road travel fairy tale, magical realism, everything in one.
Loosely based on Homer's The Odyssey.
Yeah, it's just got so much in there.
It's so much, and the soundtrack, obviously, Grammy winning soundtrack produced by T-Bone Burnett.
The Soggy Bottom Boys.
One of my others is a film that you either love it or hate it.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was sitting in the theater in November of 2002 watching this film, I was transfixed, mesmerized, hypnotized by this film, and people were walking out.
Solaris. Again, one that I saw once back then and can't remember it that well, but keep seeing it pop up on sci-fi lists.
It is a great movie.
Need to visit again because I can barely remember it.
Leash, revisit it again. It's a film that you really do have to surrender yourself to. It's a remake of a Russian classic that's twice its length that came out in the early 70s. This movie's only about 90 minutes or a little bit longer, but it's an existential film, and it's very, very it's hypnotic. It's mesmerizing. Just you really have to surrender yourself to it. And Clooney's performance is fantastic. Directed by Steven Soderbergh, a movie that is often overlooked and underappreciated.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, Profilers, Solaris is great. Watch
Solaris.
It.
I will rewatch that one for sure. Fantastic Mr. Fox,
yay,
who did the voice for Wes Anderson's stop motion movie, claymation, whatever it was, animation. It's just he was perfectly cast as this character, the charming smart thief.
He's a silver fox.
Can't give up he's kind of got an addiction to thieving. He finds it hard to change. He's conflicted with his family. I love him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Got the wink down. Very cool.
Yeah.
I love Syriana.
Yes.
Syriana from 2005, written and directed by Steven Gagan. This is the movie that won George Clooney his only actor Oscar so far.
Yep.
So far, because I'm, you know,
supporting it's actor.
Supporting actor for 2005. This, just like Michael Clayton, in a way, is a movie that you do need to see a couple of times because it is very,
it's dense.
Very dense and complex and intricate plotting. But it is a really fascinating and provocative film about the oil industry, especially overseas in the Middle East.
And he still gets headaches from when he hit his head on concrete during the torture scene.
He gained 30 pounds
he really
for that role.
Did everything.
I mean, he had that beard. He, like, talk about a movie where he hid behind his charisma and good looks.
Yeah.
He looked like he hasn't slept in like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And it is a very physically and emotionally grueling performance. And he definitely deserved the Oscar win. What else he got?
And one that he was also perfectly cast in is Gravity.
Gravity, yes.
2013.
Yep.
Alfonso Cuarón cast him, you know, on type, on brand, as that smooth, fast talking, witty, very smart fellow astronaut who becomes kind of the guardian angel character.
Literally.
To Sandra Bullock, and just his voice is so calming. He's funny, and he's not in it that long, but he's there to support her.
He's not in it that long, but the fact that he makes such an impact that it feels like he was in it longer than he really was is a testament to his performance. And we were talking about our right stuff. One of the other scenes I was thinking about was the scene in Gravity. I mean, I'm sorry if I spoil it here, but when after all hell breaks loose and Sandra Bullock's astronaut is in the cockpit of the spacecraft, and he gets in, and you're like, wait a minute, what's going on? Did he survive? And he's like joking, like you said, he's joking around, he's charismatic, and then he shifts, makes a seamless shift, and he's talking to her about don't give up, live your life, and the camera pans back to Sandra Bullock, and it pans back to his seat. And it's empty.
Yeah.
It was so chilling and so, moving when you realize that he wasn't really there.
I know. And so confusing at first when he appears because you're like, what?
How did I survive that?
Now, we're obviously just talking about the films that he starred in. We're going to get to his directing films later on. But I just want to mention the bracket winners.
Yes.
For this week. So on our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mats, we have great profilers who do these brackets where they pitch movies against each other and see who people love or which character or which movie. And so this week they did two different brackets. One was run by Rachel Cushing and the other was run by Josh Willingham. And they did one bracket for his acting roles and then the other bracket for his directing or producing.
See how versatile he is?
So versatile. So it came down to acting. It was Everett from Oh Brother versus Ryan from Up in the Air talking about favorite Clooney characters and roles. Who do you think won the acting bracket?
I'm going to go with your favorite.
No, it was actually Ryan from Ryan Up Bingham. In the Air.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I'm down with that.
And then when it came down to directing and producing, it went to Argo versus Ides of March.
Argo.
Yeah, Argo won.
It had to be Argo.
Yeah, it had to be Argo.
It did win Best Picture.
Great, great movie. All right, well, let's keep going with our number two. Which is...
What's up, bro?
Don't ever do that to me again.
I love that line.
The Descendants. Excellent film released November 18th, 2011. Directed by Alexander Payne. Ironically, his first film since 2004's Sideways. 5 Oscar nominations, including Picture, Director, Best Actor for George Clooney. It won for Adapted Screenplay. Cost only $20 million to make. Made worldwide 177 film. I love Alexander Payne's films because his characters are so quirky.
Yes.
They don't have their act together. They're so human.
Yes, and that's the thing he's so good at. Alexander Payne takes actors like Jack Nicholson or George Clooney, these big movie stars, and kind of strips them down and makes them real and human. I mean, the image of George Clooney running down the street in flip-flops or thongs, as we'd call them in Australia, and he's a dad, he's a soon-to-be widow, he's dealing with a lot, he's trying to deal with his family, he's trying to track down the guy that his wife had an affair with. I mean,
he's got a lot going on.
And he's not the charm, smooth, suave guy that has it all together. This, again, is a very different Clooney role than we've seen before.
Yeah, and also has great supporting performances from Robert Forster, Matthew Lillard. I mean, did not expect that out of him. Of course, Shailene Woodley, you know, that really put her on the map on the way to Divergent. But the music is really great, beautiful Hawaiian music. And Rolling Stone said that director Alexander Payne is a master of the human comedy, and George Clooney has never exposed himself to the camera this openly.
And Todd McCarthy, who was working for The Hollywood Reporter, said, "It's Clooney who carries it all with an underplayed, sometimes self-deprecating and exceptionally resonant performance. He's on screen nearly all the time and narrates as well and makes it easy to spend nearly 2 hours with a man forced to carry more than his fair share of the weight of the world on his shoulders for a spell." I mean, he was nominated as well for this, like you said, and he lost to...
He was nominated for 2011.
Someone who I think he became friends with because he cast him in a movie.
Oh, tell me.
Jean Dujardin.
Jean Dujardin!
From The Artist. Yeah, and then, of course... he ended up casting him in Monuments Men.
We're cool.
Both very charming actors. But I love Clooney in this role. I mean, he's flawed, he's complicated, he's humble, and he just holds back that mega charm. And it's a very relatable movie about family and about dealing with grief.
And Brian Sudfield said that Descendants is a brilliant, engaging dramedy that contains the best performance from Clooney that I've ever seen. Matt King is a simple character who's able to keep himself restrained while coping with his wife's unconsciousness and affair and dealing with his messed up daughters, the oldest played marvelously by Shailene Woodley. Once he says goodbye to his wife, it kills me each and every viewing. His story glued me, and no one could have played the role like Clooney. Hashtag film geek. Hashtag profile for life.
Yeah, that scene. That could have been another Right Stuff, that scene.
Yeah,
when
that was
he said
powerful.
Goodbye. Ugh. Joshua Willingham says, "I love The Descendants not only because it's a great film, but the way Clooney portrays his character, Matt King. Clooney has long been a staple of Hollywood, along with all the sophistication and suaveness a man can have. The Descendants made me see him in a different light, as he's a struggling father trying to raise 2 girls, all the while dealing with the struggle of a comatose, cheating wife. You see him cracking at the seams, not knowing where to turn, while trying to juggle everything going on around him. You see him stripped of his persona and view him like a regular human being. Well said.
Well said, Joshua Willingham. And that brings us to the fantastic Silver Fox, the movies that he directed and or produced that we love. And, I mean, number one on that list has to be Good Night and Good Luck.
Yes. I mean, he co-wrote, he directed, produced, he co-starred. A true story about the CBS reporter and the producer who challenged Senator McCarthy's fear campaign.
Edward R. Murrow.
Yeah.
Played by David Strathairn, Oscar nominated for that.
He was great, wasn't he?
He was great in this movie. Six Oscar nominations, including picture, director, and screenplay. Fantastic. I love it shot in black and white.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It feels very subdued and subtle in the way that it's shot, but it's got a great style to it.
Yep.
And then a movie that doesn't feel at all subdued, but is really cool in terms of the experiments he did with style, is Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Yeah, his first movie as a director. His
first movie based on Charlie Kaufman's adaptation of Chuck Barris's fictionalized biography.
It was a challenging film. It was a bold movie.
Bold, that's the thing. Very experimental. Clooney was just trying out his style with all the color and the transitions and the crazy scenes. Avant-garde, really impressive debut. And Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell was great.
He's always great.
How about The Ides of March?
Yeah, I like that. Solid.
Solid film, 2011.
Feels different from those ones we were just talking about.
Yeah, it does. I mean, he could do something like screwball comedy like The Leatherheads.
Yeah.
And then he can do like a political thriller like The Ides of March, which is based on the play Farragut North. It's a well-acted, it's solid.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling is great.
Political thriller.
And then Clooney, you know, casts himself as... And he's kind of using his persona as charming in a different way, because then when he turns, you're like, ooh.
Yeah. That was a good turn, wasn't it?
Good turn. Yeah. And I think that it's great how it shows how, you know, these idealistic people start out in politics and they might become corrupt as they go on. It's a pretty dark look at politics. You mentioned Leatherheads. It is a screwball football rom-com starring Clooney and John Krasinski. It's pretty forgettable, but it's got some good moments. And then do we mention Monuments Men?
It's fine. It's not really great. Like it.
It feels like it's trying to be an Ocean's film.
Yeah, it does feel like that, doesn't it?
It just didn't work out. Great cast, though.
And word just came out for he's going to direct his sixth movie.
Yes.
Called Suburbicon.
Suburbicon.
With Julianne Moore and Matt Damon.
And it's based on a script written by the Coen brothers. So it sounds really cool. And he's just been in Berlin, not only promoting Hail Caesar, but also talking about this film and selling it, and he's done the sales pitch and he's sold the rights worldwide.
How do you say no to him, by the way?
I know.
How do you say no? Nah, I don't think so, George.
So that will be coming very soon.
Yeah,
I'm
very
excited
soon
about that.
Well, what about the movies that he produced? Because obviously Argo. I mean, that movie won for he is an Oscar for Best Picture.
Yeah, incredible.
I mean, that's incredible.
And the thing about Clooney is both in front of the camera and behind the camera, his name gets green lights.
It does.
He helps other directors.
He produced August Osage County. He produced Our Brand is Crisis. He produced Insomnia, which is a movie that a lot of people don't know that George Clooney produced.
Yeah.
But Insomnia, I mean, you know, we talked about the movie Elsewhere.
Nolan and Pacino.
No, you know, Pacino profiles. So the guy he does not stop, and then he still finds time for all the humanitarian efforts that he does. And we are now at the number one movie on our Fast Five, which is...
Oh, man, it's huge.
You have no idea.
Ah, how big? What is it, this big? This big?
I don't want to brag.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Let's just say I have a number in mind. I haven't hit it yet.
Up in the air.
Up in the air.
I was talking about Miles.
I love this movie. It was my number one favorite film of 2009, and it lost Best Picture, unfortunately, to The Hurt Locker.
That's right. And he lost Best Actor to...
2009?
Jeff Bridges
for...
Crazy Heart.
Oh, for Crazy Heart. Damn.
Yes.
Yeah. Released December 4th, 2009, directed by Jason Reitman. Six Oscar nominations, including picture, director, screenplay, actor, and two for supporting actress. Cost $25 million to make. Box office was $167 million worldwide. And again, I mentioned I saw it at TIFF in 2009, and I just was sitting there like after the movie was going, you know, was over and I'm watching the credits. I didn't want to get up. I didn't want to run to the next thing. I wanted to be in the moment.
Yeah.
Because not just because it was a great movie on its own, but because this is, you know, this is a year after the housing crisis, that put the country into the worst recession since the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie just really hit its mark. It is It was so of the moment.
Really,
it is a snapshot of those times when companies were just laying off people left and right. And here's a guy whose job it is to go around laying off people, and he's good at it.
I know. It's great, like, when you look at the film, because not only does it make those points about the economic crisis, and it shows what it must have been like to both do the firing and get fired, but it's also a travel movie. It's very relatable. I definitely relate to it even more now than when I first saw it because of all the traveling I do with junkets. You know, I've got my security line situation down pat. I've got the miles cards, I'm priority, I've got it sorted.
Yep.
But you do relate to it being both lonely on the road and also kind of an addiction, because you can be at someone else and you can always keep moving, and it also saves you from actually having to commit to anyone. So it's also a relationships movie too. I mean, there's just so much, you know, weaved into here. Jason Reitman said himself, in one sense, it's a movie about a man who fires people for a living. In another sense, it's a movie about a man who collects air miles excessively. In another sense, it's about a man who meets a woman who's so similar to him that even though they're both believe in the idea of living solo, they begin to fall in love.
Well, Scott Mance
said
back in 2009, said it's a complex role and George Clooney plays it perfectly. In fact, never before has Clooney conveyed so much emotional depth, resulting in an unforgettable performance that's commanding, charming, vulnerable, and ultimately heartbreaking.
Smart one, that Scott Mance.
Well,
he always gets
much.
It right.
And
so in one sense, it is this kind of Clooney role, because it's the charming, the bachelor, you know, everything that he kind of was himself at the time. But on the other hand, it's not at all like Clooney, because he has that desperation to his character, the loneliness, the sadness. And
without all his stuff,
nomad.
Without that job, he's nobody.
Yeah, without what's in your backpack. It's like that nomad situation.
Yeah, when he goes home and there's nothing.
Yeah, that apartment is so depressing.
It's depressing. There's nothing on the walls. It's there's this little nothing. Thing. And just, you know, getting to that scene with Vera Farmiga at the end of the film, mm-hmm. where he, throughout the course of the movie, he's starting to finally make connections with his family, with Anna Kendrick, who is fantastic in this movie.
She was really
good. She was nominated. So was Vera Farmiga. And then he just realizes, you know what? I think I missed the boat here.
Yeah.
It might be too late for me.
Which is a fear everyone has.
But it just leaves it open.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have like that sealed ending. And I love how like every city they go to, they always show it from the air.
Yeah.
From up in the air.
Yep. Because you see it as you go across. Kenneth Turan of LA Times said, it's hard to think of an actor who is better at projecting the professional smoothness that's essential to make this character persona. But Clooney turns out to be willing to take that persona even further. And I think a lot of the success of the character was because of him.
Definitely. The Miami Herald added, no, Clooney has no peer at conveying suave, unflappable charm. But the role of Ryan Bingham requires the actor to do something that's different, deflate the illusion and explore the emptiness beneath the cool.
And our very own Jason Smith says, Up in the Air is one of my favorite movies of all time. George Clooney's character is a man who prefers constants in an ever-changing world and ever-changing environment. He isolates himself for safety and security, but deep down inside, he longs for the true connection. I love this movie from the first time I saw it.
And our own Tyler Myers.
Tyler is watching. Hello, Tyler.
Hello, Tyler. And you're going to give you the last word on our George Clooney profile here by saying, there are so many great George Clooney films to pick from, but the one I'm going with is Up in the Air. This is a film that stayed with me for a while ever since I saw it, for it beautifully tackles loneliness and humanity with such emotional resonance while still adding Jason Reitman's signature humor. Clooney is perfect as Ryan Bingham, for we've all been in that situation where you've spent your time in such an isolated state, and there's something or someone waiting for you in this vast world to change your life around for better and worse.
Yeah.
Everything hits on the right notes, from its quirky beginning right down to its bittersweet end, and that brings the show to a bittersweet end.
Should you do some business?
Yes, let's take care of some business before we go. Make sure you go to iTunes. Yes, we have a podcast on iTunes, Profiles. Even if you're watching the show live, even if you're watching it later, make sure you go to iTunes, rate and review profiles. Write us a little review. Let us know what you think on the iTunes page. Mm-hmm. And make sure you share it with everyone. Make sure you also go to youtube.com/Popcorn Talk Network. Subscribe to us there. And again, share our YouTube show to everyone and tell them to share it with everyone too. Make sure you go to our Facebook page. Yes. Our Facebook page is the happiest place on earth.
Yes.
For movie people. It is Profiles with Malone and Mance. Go there, like our Facebook page. You'll be the first to know who our next profile is. You can weigh in on the movies that you love and why you love them. And as you can see in here, we do read your comments and give you credit because we're all profilers. Anyway.
We're all profilers. And if you want to wear your love for profiles right here on your body, you can go to tfury.com/user/profiles and you can get, I've got the Blade Runner one right now. You probably can't see because my computer's in the way, but it's got our faces on it. And
I've got the classic hashtag film geek. It's tpublic, right?
Oh yeah. Tpublic. Sorry.
tpublic.com/profiles.
tpublic.com/user/profiles.
There you go.
Promise. That's
and then
the right
one last way. Thing, make sure you let us know what you think of everything we just talked about by shooting us something on Twitter, tweeting us at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance. At Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance.
Sorry for listening with headphones.
It's all about the pause.
And now I close my book.
I close mine. I try again, and I close it again.
And there we'll be back, not next week, but the week after.
And until next time,
bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.